Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you very much for joining us. Our guests are Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News, Sean Dugan of the Alaska Dispatch, and Dacia Eaton of KSKA. The long-awaited EPA report on the proposed Pebble Mine is out, and it says there's significant risk to the fisheries of Bristol Bay. Steve, tell us about the report and the reaction here in Alaska, especially Governor Parnell.
Yeah, the EPA spent the last 3 years compiling this report. It had hundreds of thousands of public comments, did a lot of scientific studies, built this report over the course of 3 years, released it this week. And it basically studies the effects of a large-scale gold and copper mine on the fisheries of Bristol Bay. It concludes that if a mine is built, depending on the size of the mine, anywhere from 24 miles to 94 miles of stream would be wiped out. And that, of course, would be valuable habitat for not only sockeye salmon, but Dolly Varden and rainbow trout in the area as well. It also says that there are, it goes through various scenarios that, from if a truck overturns in the area or if there's a leak in the wastewater holding area, this is what could be with the kind of damage that could be done as well. So it says the damage could be significant. So the environmental groups, the native groups, anyone who opposes the idea of the Pebble Partnership building this mine in this area have grabbed hold of this report, obviously, and they're saying this is proof that this thing can't be built, that this would devastate the sockeye salmon industry in the Bristol Bay region, and therefore the state and the feds should just block it right now. You also have Governor Parnell and the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, AOGA. They've come out on the other side.
Governor Parnell called it a pretext. A pretext for what?
Well, I think he's been battling the federal government and quote-unquote federal overreach, and he says this is another example of federal overreach. The permitting process hasn't even begun for Bristol, for Pebble. Pebble has not applied for its permits. And AOGA and the governor basically say, that's the process. They have to meet our clean water standards. We have to go through the permitting process and look at this project methodically. And here the EPA has come in and delivered this report. And the EPA says this is not the final conclusion. This is just a report, a study that everybody could refer to and possibly have its questions answered. Still,
Sean in here, and then we'll come to you, Steve. Sean, what happens next in this process, which has been going on for, these several years?
Well, for now, probably a lot of nothing, to be quite honest with you. I mean,
whole lot of nothing going on.
Status quo, basically, for the Pebble. What it really does, though, and Steve's right, the EPA has insisted over and over that the report doesn't indicate that it's going to take any regulatory action. Pebble hasn't submitted any plans. They still have to go through the environmental impact statement process for any plan that's submitted. But what it does is it makes it harder, I think, for the mining companies themselves to attract investment or figure out a way to move forward. Anglo American already got out of Pebble Mine. Rio Tinto is looking at getting out. That leaves Northern Dynasty kind of leading the way, and they said they wanted to have a plan, unveil what their plan is by the end of 2013.
And they need partners. It's clear that they can't do this by themselves.
They
do. That appears to be the case.
And we've seen statements about a proposed Pebble plan coming over and over, and it hasn't happened. I think what this does is it creates just another hurdle for anybody that might want to actually try to build the mine.
I think it's also important. I worked in Bristol Bay for a year before I came here to Anchorage, and I think it's important to remember who asked for this report, and it was the tribes. So,
of that region.
Yeah, of that region here in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Steve, one of the things that I think viewers wonder about is when a report comes out like this and parties on one side disagree with it, they say it's bad science.
Yeah.
And the viewers are left, or the voters of the public is left to sort out, well, is it bad science, bad politics? What is it?
Well, that's what John Shively of the Pebble Partnership basically said. He said this is a rushed report. Now, I was looking at 3 years. Well, that seems like a long time. And they had, I think they said a million public comments on this. Well, that seems like a lot of people. And then there's a lot of studies that went into this. So it seems like it's pretty extensive. But according to Mr. Shively, these things take years longer normally in this business. So he said that, yes, the report is rushed. There's some big holes in there. The other thing that he said that's probably important to point out as well is that the EPA makes some assumptions, and Mr. Shively counters by saying, well, that's not going to be part of our plan. That's not going to be the part of this mine. And so they shouldn't have gone there. That's not even relevant to what Pebble would be. So,
but Pebble has not yet released a plan. So how can they know?
That's true. And I think that's a good point too, Desha. I think if Pebble would put together this plan, and when is it going to come out? Because it's the vacuum, you've got a vacuum, and people hate that, so they're going to fill it.
And that's certainly been true with advertising we've seen, which
absolutely
sponsored by Bob Gillum, which has gone on for
right. And one other thing, Steve, bring this up, but what kind of mine is it going to be? You know, the EPA does make some assumptions in its report. It looked at, I think, three separate sizes of mine. But is it going to be an underground mine? Is it going to be an above-ground mine? I think looking at the mining companies themselves and some of their internals kind of gives you a clue. I believe Rio Tinto wanted an underground mine, but that's problematic with the amount of ore they got to get out of there to get the actual gold, copper, and molybdenum. So
another thing to remember is that it looks like one of the reasons the EPA went forward and did this is because there could be a theoretical mining district in that region, not just Pebble Mine. Yeah. So these are baseline studies on which decisions could be made about an entire mining district, not just this one mine.
Desha, a state judge in another long-awaited decision says the mayor of Anchorage can veto the date for the election during which the labor law referendum is held. This is very confusing because it comes on the heels of another judge's ruling about whether the referendum can be on the ballot at all. So please clarify.
Yes, it seems that the mayor and the assembly and the community are having trouble working together. Everything's getting worked out in the courts here in Anchorage these days. There was a Supreme Court case, and five Supreme Court judges decided that the referendum to repeal the very controversial labor law, also known as AO 37, could go ahead. But there was also something in Superior Court that was looking at whether or not the mayor could veto the referendum being on the ballot this spring.
And if I might, there were different plaintiffs in these cases. In one case, it was the labor unions. In the other case, it was the assembly, right?
Right, the labor unions, it was in the Supreme Court. And the other one, the other little
Superior Court
fight was in Superior Court between the assembly and the mayor. And basically, the Superior Court reaffirmed that the mayor does have sweeping veto power, even if it's about an ordinance that concerns setting election dates, which is usually the task of the assembly. So at this time, the referendum can go ahead, according to the Supreme Court, but according to the Superior Court, it's not going to be on the spring ballot. So when is it going to be? And that's the big question. It's completely up in the air. It could be set for a special election, it could be on a fall ballot. At the same time, to make things even more interesting and confusing, one assembly member is pushing to move the elections to November to coincide, the municipal elections to November, to coincide with state and federal elections. It looks like that's unlikely that it's going to happen because a lot of other assembly members oppose that.
As does the clerk's office, because it'll cost about $300,000 to hold that election.
And the Anchorage Board of Ethics, of course, has also ruled that this assembly can't vote to basically extend its term 6 or 7 months. So, as Desha said, it all gets kind of wrapped around the axle, but the big argument over why, you know, the issue of whether there will be a vote has now been settled by the courts. There will be. When that will happen is, as she said, is kind of up for grabs. But the you know, there has been a lot of debate over that issue. And I know the mayor and supporters of AO37 believe it shouldn't be on the spring ballot because it typically gets a turnout of about 20%, so 1 in 5 voters. And the worry there is that, of course, labor unions, which are very well organized, could pack the polls and have a bigger influence on that matter in April than they could maybe in November when maybe half the people turn out to vote. So,
Steve, but a long career as the reasonable man of Alaska journalism.
Yeah. I started when I was 6.
What would a reasonable man expect next? Where do we go from here?
I don't know. I have no idea. I think we're going to go see some more judges. I think we're going to go up to the Supreme Court on this.
Let's back up. How about this? Is there a possibility that somehow in this the Assembly and the mayor can cut a deal on when the election's going to be held?
Oh, boy. I don't know. There's some pretty entrenched people there. Dick Traney, all those folks, they're pretty entrenched in their beliefs. I don't see any compromises right now. Maybe I'm being too pessimistic. I think, first of all, we're going to go to court again. I think this will get kicked up to the Supreme Court. The Assembly has an opportunity.
The Superior Court ruling.
Right, yes.
On the veto.
Superior Court.
Right,
on the vetoes, which to me is a... The city charter has given the mayor of Anchorage, all mayors of Anchorage, a lot of power. This is a very powerful mayoral seat. And the fact that the courts come back and found with Mayor Sullivan, that's not very surprising. He argued that point in court, as lawyers did. And we've got a very powerful form of mayor here, and whether you like it or not, that's the way it is. So I think, though, that the Assembly is going to ask the Superior Court judge to reconsider his decision. That doesn't go, then they'll go to the Supreme Court and they'll say, okay, let's settle this once and for all. And if that, again, if the mayor, if that's upheld, then you've got a standoff here. You got, okay, we got this election, and okay, I've got this veto. When are you going to have this election?
Right.
Because I better like it because I can veto it. So they better reach a compromise
after that. And there is a possibility, Dacia, the court could say, a court, the Supreme Court, I assume, that we'll have an election when the mayor says we'll have an election?
I don't know about that, but I mean, there's always the possibility that there could be a move to go back and make some amendments to the charter because of this. I mean, maybe groups will decide, hey, we don't want the mayor to have this much power. Who knows what's going to happen?
And we're having an election in April. It's going to change some of the makeup of the Assembly.
And that could be a...
6 seats are open.
You don't know. Yeah, that could also change the dynamics of this entire argument very well. One of the things, though, that people got to keep... just if I could pontificate for just a second, this claim of moving the election from April to November so the voter turnout is higher is really, I think, bogus. And really, if you want to improve voter turnout, it is not by moving this thing all over the calendar. Because the reason why it was moved from October to April was for the very same reason.
The argument then was that the fall elections got buried in the state elections and people lost track of them.
Right. You had an August primary, you had a November general election, and then these little guys were kind of slammed in the middle of all of this stuff. They couldn't raise money. They didn't get any attention. They couldn't get any TV time. They couldn't get airtime to advertise their campaigns or anything like that. So they said, well, let's go to April. And if you look at the turnout, I went back to 1979, you look at the turnout for municipal elections, it has steadily gone down, as it has throughout the country. If you look at the mayoral races in New York and in LA in the last year or so, they were less than 20% as well.
De Blasio was elected in New York. He was elected mayor by super voters.
Yeah, and so if you want to do something, you want to look at extended voting times. You want to look at internet voting. Yeah. You better look at some creative ways of actually getting people out to vote, and that's what's going to actually.
Sean,
that's your reason, your motivation for this.
Well, and that also has been brought up, right? Allowing mail-in voting, allowing internet voting, but of course, both of those things come with their own problems. Internet voting, of course. Of course, the worry there is, well, can somebody hack the vote then? You know, the reason that the state's vote counting machines are autonomous is for that very thing. So do we ever want to get...
We want additional participation, but not too much participation.
Yeah. There's a lot of problems with all the options on the table, but one thing's very clear. The time is ticking on this because I think the city has until about February 6th or 16th, somewhere in there, to print its ballot. So whatever's going to be on the April election needs to be figured out in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Is that right? You agree?
Yeah, that's right. And as far as I know, I talked with the clerk's office, and right now they're not planning to put it on there.
Okay. Sean, sticking with Anchorage Municipal Affairs, Mayor Sullivan refunds the city parts of the cost of two business trips he took that were tied into fundraisers.
Mm-hmm. Let me just start off by saying it is an interesting time to cover Anchorage Municipal Affairs. Of course, complicating everything we just talked about, the mayor of Anchorage, Dan Sullivan, is running for lieutenant governor. And he, as mayors do, go to Washington, D.C. From time to time to lobby for certain things on the city's behalf. Well, while he was there.
Standard procedure.
It's standard stuff. All the mayors have done it. But while he was there, he was in Washington, D.C. He's running for lieutenant governor, so he had a fundraiser, raise some money in D.C. Well, Sullivan says now on the advice of the state, because he's running for statewide office, that he has now reimbursed the city a total of, I believe it's $214 for the time that he spent at his fundraiser, because state laws require you to parse out that time.
Now, and the $200 was $200, excuse me, was based on his salary.
I'm not exactly sure.
I
believe it's prorated based on the amount of time he spent at this versus what he was doing for the city of Anchorage.
Okay.
So, but the real problem is, and Dacia mentioned charter changes. This may be another one. The city ethics code does not say anything about this. Now, in the state code, it does, and so the mayor says, in an abundance of caution, he decided to reimburse the city after looking at the state laws because he's running for state office. But the city ethics code doesn't have anything in there saying that if you go on a business trip, you're not allowed to use some of that for your own time, whether it be campaign or personal. And so now assembly members are actually considering throwing that into the ethics laws as well. So I think they spent a grand total of $3,270 for airfare and hotel for the mayor and two aides in Washington, D.C. Now, this also comes, the mayor reimbursed for a trip he took to Kenai as well. So, but in grand total, it was a little over $200. I think the issue is bigger than the amount of money.
Okay. Yeah. Dacia, Anchorage law enforcement has been cracking down on the new drug, or relatively new drug, Spice, which has been getting a lot of attention.
Yeah, at Tuesday's assembly meeting, they heard testimony from the community about the problems that Spice use is causing for downtown businesses, violent behavior and crimes that are taking place down at the homeless shelter because of homeless people who are using this drug, which is marketed as synthetic marijuana, but has effects that are more like that of PCP or meth. People get violent, they have superhuman strength, they have mood swings. So this stuff, Spice or bath salts, it goes by a variety of names. Sometimes it's in little packets that look like candy that say brain freeze or train wreck or has a skull. And it's really bizarre the way it is marketed. It doesn't say what's in the packet. The stuff comes from China. They don't know what's in it. The lab tests can't keep up with it. And that's why they've had trouble dealing with this in the courts or cracking down.
And we should add, and you've pointed this out before, it is sold over the counter at the present time.
It's sold over the counter
at
smoke shops, apparently, mostly. And a lot of people are using it, and you have no idea what kind of effect it's going to have. And so anyway, the assembly passed a law on Tuesday that fines people using it $500. So the police can now ticket you, give you a ticket like a driving ticket, a traffic ticket,
$500. Code enforcement ticket.
Code enforcement ticket. So if they think you're using it and they see you with a packet of that, they can just kind of pull you over on the sidewalk and give you a ticket. They can do the same thing for businesses that are selling this stuff. And that's in effect right now. And I talked with the municipal prosecutor, and she said, we know that kids are dying of this stuff and having all kinds of problems with it. And I know that you covered a story, Sean, about a kid recently who was found dead and had some of this stuff in a pipe. But they can't even say that it was Spice because they can't tell what's in it.
Let's get Sean in here.
Yeah, this 18-year-old Curtis Hildreth was up visiting his aunt's family in Wasilla, and he apparently had smoked Spice. He was found dead the next day, collapsed against a partially open windowsill with the Spice and a pipe next to him. Now, we sent his blood away for testing. They tested for more than 300 chemicals and alcohol. They found none, and that's pretty common in cases with Spice. As Dacia alluded to, the chemists, mainly in China, have changed the chemical combination of this mixture of drugs over the years to avoid the laws aimed at making them illegal. So the city, Cynthia Franklin, the city prosecutor, has been working with a prosecutor in Bangor, Maine, which is the first municipality in the country to try this new approach. So instead of saying if it has X, Y, or Z chemicals in it, we'll make it illegal, now they say, look, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. If you're paying $20 for 0.5 grams of something that claims to be incense, it's not incense. If it doesn't say where it's manufactured and what it contains, it's not incense, which is typically what these drugs are marketed for. But they're also marketed to kids, as Daisha's talked about. The packages have cartoonish characters and smiley faces, and it's a really bad drug because nobody knows what's in it. And so
these packages clearly don't have manufactured in such and such a place by so and so, contains the following ingredients.
Most of them contain one of two disclaimers, the first being not for human consumption, and of course it is. You can even ask it's how to use the drug. And then the second one, I think, says does not violate any state or federal laws. Now, there is a federal analog act, which basically makes drugs illegal if they look or act like other drugs. And they did some raids using that act in May of last year in Fairbanks. They raided about four head shops up there. But they haven't been able to press any criminal charges anywhere in the nation with the federal analog act. What they did was they confiscated the drug, and now they're suing to keep the proceeds they believe were the sales from the drug. I think it's a couple $100,000 in cash and silver bars. So this wouldn't make it illegal either, but it'd make it so expensive for a shop to have the drug, $500 a package, you got 1,000 packages, that's $500,000 in fine, that it could clear it out. And in Bangor, Maine, that's what they've seen. The spice has disappeared, at least in that city. So.
And the next step that a lot of law enforcement people and citizens are hoping will happen is that there'll be a state statute to address this issue and perhaps aimed at businesses that sell it.
And Kevin Meyer, senator from Anchorage, is working on that. He's working with Cynthia Franklin to make the state statute mimic the city statute. But of course, even if they get rid of it, everywhere in Alaska, and this drug has been found to be a problem as far away as, believe it or not, Little Diomede, but even if they get rid of it everywhere here locally, it'll still be readily available over the internet. So,
Steve, the Port of Anchorage project manager seeks the dismissal of suits against contractors.
Yep.
This is the latest installment of the drama as the port turns.
Boy, I'll tell you. Yeah. It's a company called Integrated Concepts. It's a federal contractor to build the port, and then part of the plan called for these steel walls it was a new concept that they were
interlocking interlocking walls of steel.
Yeah.
So you're supposed to pound these things into the ocean floor and then backfill it, and voila, you have an expanded port. Problem is, these things bent up and they weren't hooking together very well, and things just didn't work. And you're talking about a lot of money. So the city has gone after Integrated Concepts and asked for a refund for its money. And Integrated Concepts has basically gone to court and said, we should be immune from all of this under federal contract laws. You know, we said what we were going to do. We are operating well within the scope of the federal guidelines of this contract, and and we're immune from any kind of legal action. They've performed up to the letter of the law. And the city, of course, is just saying, well, no, what we have is damaged goods, and our port's not. The work on the ports had to stop because of all of this. So the city and we're trying to continue to seek some kind of compensation back from this company. We'll
see. Did you want to get in real quickly?
Yeah, real quickly. It's also important to note that CH2M Hill, which used to be Vico before it was purchased by CH2M Hill, is also involved in this, and they're in the lawsuit, and the mayor has just selected that company to be the new port project manager. So in a way, we're trying to make managers of one of the companies we're suing. Now, that was up for approval by the assembly on Tuesday, but the members took no action on that. They want a work session, so it's not a slam dunk for CH2M Hill either way.
Okay, let's turn to Daisha. Daisha, preschool enrollments here in Alaska are down. This is surprising. Tell us about it.
It is, because there's been a concerted effort over the past few years to try to increase the number of children who are getting access to early learning here in the state. But the Annie E. Casey Foundation says their research shows that Alaska is now 47th out of the 50 states for the percent of children enrolled in preschool. In 2009, they've been tracking this for a while, in 2009 we were at 39%, which still isn't that great, but we're now down to 34%. And there is a waiting list for Head Start, which is specifically geared toward getting low-income children into preschool programs, that has 1,200 kids on it right now. And at any given time, I went and visited the Muldoon East Anchorage Kids Corps Head Start Center. They say there's 100 to 150 kids just trying to get into that program. So it's...
What about, if I might, rural Alaska? I suppose it depends on the particular town or village, its size?
It varies from village and from place to place. Out there, there isn't as much availability and access,
right.
Obviously. There's been a big effort, Abby Hensley with New Best Beginnings. I talked to her about that. Right now, they have a state-funded preschool program that was started in 2009 to address this problem, to go and start preschools in school districts where there wasn't very good access to Head Start. And the state gave $2 million per year back in 2009, and they've never increased that number. And, you know, of course, education funding has been flat for the past several years.
Did the Casey Foundation and Casey Foundation offer a prescription of what the state should do?
Yeah, they say they need to provide more access to preschool. They need to give parents, you know, better support systems so that they know what they should be working with their kids on, and more access even to earlier learning before preschool in the form of really high quality daycare programs.
Okay, that's it for this week. We are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week right here on Alaska Edition.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org. Or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.